digital world. Every day is game day.
This is
the future of radio in America.
The future of radio.
This is the future of radio.
The future of radio.
Rather extraordinary things.
Cyber Station USA.
100% homeboy. Radix Cube.
To remake the world.
Broadcasting to the universe.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Revolutionizing radio.
This may be one of the greatest moments in history.
This is Sheila Jordan inviting you to join me in the Jazz Room with host Joan Watson Jones on the CyberStationUSA.com radio network.
Hello, young lovers, whoever you are. I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. Be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Be brave, be faithful and true. Cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you.
Hello, welcome to the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones. Thanks for stopping by. Come in, relax while we enjoy great jazz. Each week we present the music of independent jazz artists, as well as those we've grown to love through the years. And yes, of course, the legends. We open with music of our guest, vocalist, and jazz legend, Sheila Jordan. At age 90, she is still singing and touring the world. We met with Sheila at her home in upstate New York. In this part two of our three-part interview, she tells us why she moved to New York City. You're listening right now to Hello, Young Lovers, and then Little Song and Blackbird from her 2003 recording, Little Song.
It feels to have wings on your heels, and you fly down the street in a trance. You fly down the street on a chance that you meet, but you meet not really by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Don't cry because I'm alone. All of my memories are happy tonight. I've had a love of my own. I've had a love of my own like yours. I've had a love of my own. Maybe 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 40 lovers, only kidding. Oh my. Oh my, oh hey, hey, oh my, hey, 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 oh. Oh my, yeah, 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 hey, hey, yeah. Oh my, yeah, 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 hey, hey, yeah. Oh my, oh, 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 hey, hey, yeah. Oh my, hey, yeah. Oh, hey, yeah. Oh, my, 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 yeah, way, yeah, yeah. Oh, my, 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 way, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, my, my, oh, 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 blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to rise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the light of the dark black night, into the light of the dark black night. Oh, 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 hey, hey. Oh, my, hey, hey. Oh, hey.
So what took you to New York?
My first boyfriend was Frank Foster, and we shared a furnished room on John R. and I think Woodward Avenue, and it was a furnished room. And as I said, I had moved away from home when I was seven, you know, right after I got out of high school. I was about 18 or whatever. And then I didn't go with Frank right away, but around that time, by now, you know, I'm almost hitting 21. So, and at that time in New York, you could get in the bars at 18, which was great.
Yeah.
18 years old. But I think, I can't remember. But anyway, I started going out with Frank, and Frank had to go into the, he was drafted into the Army. I think it was the Korean War, and when he went into the Korean War, I moved to New York. I didn't want to stay in Detroit because it was the racial prejudice was just too crazy. I mean, to constantly be down at the police station, and how about I have a cop, a policeman, a plainclothesman questioning me why I'm hanging around with, and he used the N-word. I said, what did he say to me? He said, I'm going to tell you something. I said, I don't know color. I said, color is just a color to me. It's, it doesn't mean anything. And he said, I'm going to tell you something. I have a 9-year-old daughter at home. This is a cop now.
Yeah.
He said, if I found her the way I found you tonight, with these, and then he used the N-word, he said, I'd take this gun and go home and blow her brains out. I said, oh, my God, to myself, oh, this guy's dangerous. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so, and Frank, they separated Frank from me because I was with Frank when they busted, you know, what do you want to call it, busted her, mm-hmm. when they took me down for questioning. And they never said anything to Frank. He just said, no, they didn't say nothing to me. So, you know, it was just this whole crazy, I don't know, but I wanted to get away from it. And I thought New York is cool. It's much, there's less prejudice and it'll be much easier. I came to New York and I was living in my loft to go ahead a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I was walking with two Afro-American painters, friends of mine. And four white guys in the bar on the corner jumped us and held my friends hostage up against the wall. And the other one knocked me down, kicked my face, knocked my tooth out.
Oh my God.
I was bleeding, and I looked up, and I saw a guy coming across the street all dressed up in a coat and a suit and tie with a gun. And he had the gun pointed at me. And I said, man, I'm going to die over this. But I didn't care. I just didn't care. I knew I was right. The guy happened to be a plainclothesman, and he said to the guy that was beating me up, he said, you know this woman? And the guy kicking me and everything said, no. He said, well, get off her. Get up against the wall. And so he had all four guys up against the wall. So then he came over to me. He said, do you want to press charges? He said, I'll do whatever you want, miss. He said, but I got to tell you this. They know where you live. Because we were in front of my building ready mm-hmm. to go upstairs. He said, they know where you live. So just think about it, but I'll do whatever you want. And then I said, oh, well, maybe I better not. I regret to this day that I didn't.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand.
But
that.
I was afraid, you know.
Yeah. Now, when did you start recording?
I was working at a little club after my daughter was born. I got a club in the village. I got a gig in a club in the village. It didn't pay anything, but I didn't do it for money because I had an office job. I was typing and doing, you know, like filing and stuff. So that's how I made my money. I paid my rent. I bought my kids' clothes. You know, I bought our food and everything because Duke left us. He had a very serious heroin habit. Mm. So he left me and went with some other woman. And so he left me and Tracy. It was too much for him. And I had this job, and I made $6 a night. And by the time I paid the babysitter $4 and took a taxi home, I didn't have anything left. But I didn't do it for that. I just did it so I could keep singing and try out ideas and learn new tunes. And it was a great gig, and it was called the Page Three, and it was fantastic. And it was amazing because the bass player there was a young Steve Swallow, and he was playing acoustic bass before he started playing electric bass. And we used to do things together. Of course, that would anger the piano player.
Of course, yes.
Because I wanted to do all three tunes. I did six tunes a night, and I wanted to always do all of them with just bass. I wanted to try out my ideas. But anyway, George Russell came in to hear one of the piano players who was a student of his, because on Jazz Night they had a different piano player. So he came in and he heard his student, and he heard me. And afterwards he came over and he said, "Where do you come from to sing like that?" I didn't know George Russell, you know. I didn't know who he was, I mean. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Where do I come from? I come from hell." He said, "Oh, I'd like to visit hell with you one day." And I said, "Yeah, okay." And think that was the end of it. But anyway, he took my number and he called me. And he said, "Do you want to go to hell?" And I said, "Yeah. I'll get somebody." So I got my best friend at the time to take care of Tracy. Because she was, she was in nursery school, and she loved Tracy, and Tracy was a beautiful little kid. She was so sweet. So I left Tracy for the weekend, and I went with George, and we went to Pennsylvania.
Here's a cut from Sheila's CD, A Portrait of Sheila, her first recording, titled Willow Weep for Me.
Stream that runs to sea. Listen to my plea. Listen, willow. Thank you. sympathy. Bend your branches down along the ground and cover me. When the shadows fall, bend you willow and willowy for me. Willowy for me.
Here in the Jazz Room, I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones. We continue with our interview with singer and jazz legend, Sheila Jordan.
My grandmother was still alive. She was the only one in the family back there, and she was still alive. And so we went up to this private club that was, actually, it was a coal miners' club. All the coal miners hung out there. It was their club. They could go there anytime they wanted to. And, you know, on Sunday they had the blue law or whatever they call that law where you can't, there's no bars open. But this club was open. And, of course, coal miners could go there. So, anyway, this one night we went there. My grandmother said, let's go up to the Bund. That's what the place was called, the Bund. And so we went up, and there was no miners there. They were all out of work. You know, they had the strikes and the whole thing. It was really a terrible time for coal miners. And there was one old miner sitting at the bar. So my grandmother introduced us and said, this is my granddaughter, and, you know, and she started saying we're famous. And I said, Mom, I'm not famous. George Russell's famous, but I'm not. You know, I mean, I have an office job, but I didn't get into that. But I mean, no, and I never thought of myself as famous. I don't even think about that today. I mean, famous, what the hell's that? You know, no, I'm not famous, you know. I love the music, but so anyway, back to the coal miner, he looked at me and he said, well, do you still sing You Are My Sunshine, Jeannie? Because my name was Sheila Jeanette, and Sheila was... I had a lot of trouble with my first name when I was in Pennsylvania because it was an unusual name at the time, and they were calling me Sheba, Queen of the Jungle, and making fun of my name. So I started going by my middle name, and I cut it down from Jeanette to Jeannie. And the coal miner said, well, do you still sing You Are My Sunshine, Jeannie? And I said, no, I don't sing that tune anymore. He said, why not? And George Russell said, why not? So there was an old out-of-tune, really terrible out-of-tune, upright piano in the corner. So George went over and started playing. And, you know, he's playing this beautiful out stuff. And my grandmother said, that's not the way it goes. What are you playing? That's terrible. So George laughed. He was cool. My grandmother literally pushed him off the bench. Said, I'll play it because you don't know how to play it. So I ended up singing You Are My Sunshine with my grandmother playing the piano. And then we left the bar. We came back to New York. And I don't know, it wasn't too much longer later. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a month or less than a month. George Russell called me up. He said, are you free? I said, yeah, I don't have to pick my daughter up from nursery school until I think it was 3 o'clock or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I work part-time in the morning, so I was free. I said, yeah, after I get out of work, I'll be free at noon, you know, noon, 1 o'clock. He said, well, can you come by before you go get your kid? And I said, yeah. He said, I want you to hear something. So I said, okay. So I went by his apartment, which was on Jane Street at the time, which is not that far from where I am. On the west side, you know, I could walk there. And I went down, and he sat down at the piano and he said, I want to play something for you. And he played this incredible, whatever it was. I didn't know what it was. It was just beautiful. It was the introduction, but I didn't know that's what it was at the time. He stopped and he said, okay, sing. I said, sing what? He said, sing You Are My Sunshine. I said, oh, I thought that's what you were playing. From the chord changes I could hear, but what do you mean sing You Are My Sunshine? He said, yes, yeah, sing it. I said, were you going to play for me underneath? He said, no, sing it alone. I said, I can't do that. He said, what do you mean you can't do that? You've been singing by yourself all your life. Get out of here. Sing it. So I said, okay. So I sang it, and it was recorded on Riverside. Have you ever heard it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God, you should check it out.
I'm going to check it out.
You get it on YouTube. It was put on George Russell's recording called The Outer View.
The Outer View, George Russell's The Outer View. I'll look into that.
And it's You Are My Sunshine. We wanted to change the title to a drinking song and dedicate it to the out-of-work coal miners, but they wouldn't let us change it.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I recorded it for the miners, and it became a lot of people didn't hear it, and you know, but the musicians that heard it were blown away by it. I mean, it was very, very, not my singing. I'm not bragging about that. I mean, this arrangement is incredible.
I'm going to check that out.
And this tenor player, Paul Plummer, was fantastic. He has since passed away. I think he was from Cincinnati. But Paul Plummer was incredible. George Russell had a way of finding people like Paul Plummer. And he was very instrumental in recording Bill Evans' his first recording. I mean, George had that thing going. It was incredible that what he did. But anyway, and so that was Sunshine. And so then he did he paid for a demo of me, and he took it around to Quincy Jones, was the A&R man at Mercury. I think it was Mercury. And then he also took it to Blue Note. Now, Blue Note didn't record singers. They only recorded instrumentalists. They were not into recording singers. And but George took it, left it with him anyway, with Blue Note. Blue Note picked it up, and so did Quincy, but I had already signed with Blue Note. I mean, said I would record, and I recorded. Do you have Portrait of Sheila?
I don't have that one, no.
Really? Well, that's my very first one.
All right, that's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, that's my first one. That's my very first recording. Well, I might have an extra. I bought some from Amazon, so, you know, they're hard to get now because I might have an extra. Let me look before you leave.
Okay.
Anyway, so it was George's decision that I use guitar, bass, and drums, not piano. I said, I don't sing with guitar. He said, I know, but you will now. And that was the first guitar trio.
Wow.
I think it was before Ella did with Joe Pass. I believe it was the very first recording of a singer with guitar, bass, and drums. And Steve Swallow was on acoustic bass. So, that was it.
Finally, here's an excerpt from that George Russell recording, You Are My Sunshine, featuring Sheila Jordan on vocals, and it's featured on his CD, The Outer View. This ends part two of our chat with Sheila Jordan. In part three, Sheila will talk about her teaching and her tours around the world. Learn more about Sheila at SheilaJordanJazz.com. Thank you for spending time here with us in the Jazz Room. We love hearing from you. You can now find the Jazz Room on Twitter at Ms. Jazz Kitty, or you may email me or chat with me through the Jazz Room page of my website, JoanWatsonJones.com. Until next time, you've been in the Jazz Room. I'm your host, Joan Watson Jones.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order. there is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple. Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archived CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
Future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.